From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery. The State Education Department recently told the Juneau School District that it could no longer accept city funding outside the cap, a limit on city funding set by the state. At the root of the dispute is a federal law that saves the state millions of dollars in education spending. KTOO's Katie Anastas has more.
Earlier this year, the Juneau Assembly gave the school district more than $2 million to resolve deficits from non-instructional costs, things like transportation and the district's childcare program. In June, the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development sent a letter to the district saying that extra funding wasn't allowed. School Board President Dee Dee Sorensen says this has never been an issue before.
It's like implying that there's something afoot, and there's not.
The school board sent a letter back saying that money isn't subject to the local funding cap because it pays for community services, not day-to-day district operations. They're still waiting on a response from the state. But whether or not that funding applies to Juneau's local contribution cap, the state has two reasons to limit local funding. On one hand, it ensures that school districts are funded as fairly as possible across Alaska. On the other, it allows the state to avoid paying millions of dollars to schools through a practice used by no other state in the country. The law at the heart of the dispute involves two things: federal impact aid and the disparity test. Federal impact aid goes to school districts where students live on federal property or Indian lands. That money is meant to help those districts make up for lost tax revenue, since federal land is exempt from property taxes. In Alaska, that includes military bases and Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act land. The disparity test measures whether a state's school funding is shared fairly among all districts. Alaska passes that test if there's a less than 25% funding difference between the highest and lowest funded districts. But passing the test doesn't just indicate fairness. It helps reduce state spending on schools. The state has to give school districts a certain amount of money each year. But if the state passes the disparity test, the federal government lets the state put most of the impact aid toward that amount. Juneau Democratic Senator Jesse Kiel is on the Senate Education Committee.
The formula says that we have now says the state deducts 90% of the impact aid money from what it gives districts toward their basic needs. So from the state's check.
He says deducting the impact aid from the state's check keeps that money within Alaska's school funding formula. The formula gives more money for certain reasons, like having students with intensive special needs or offering vocational training. Outside the formula, impact aid would only go to districts with federal or ANCSA land.
Not based on what it costs to educate kids there. Not based on how tough it is to build a kid's future there.
Keeping money within the formula helps ensure that it's distributed fairly. But passing the disparity test still means the state writes a smaller check. That's what's at risk if the state fails.
That's the potential, right? Is we might have to let districts keep their impact aid money and not have the state say, oh, somebody in government, in a higher level of government, is giving you that, so we won't.
In fiscal year 2022, the state deducted $73 million in federal impact aid from its cost to schools. The loss to affected districts varies. The state deducts $5 million in federal impact aid from its contribution to the Anchorage School District. In Fairbanks, it's $7 million. In the Lower Kuskokwim School District, it's more than $15 million. In districts that don't have a lot of federal land, like the Matanuska-Susitna Borough and Juneau, the state doesn't deduct any impact aid.
I have not seen a session go by in 25 years where there isn't a training session on the education funding formula. And the education funding formula walkthrough always includes this step about deducting 90% of impact aid. And legislators with significant federal presence in their district say, wait, you do what? And legislators without major federal infrastructure or impacts in their district go, what's the next step?
According to the U.S. Department of Education, Alaska is the only state that counts federal impact aid as state funding. New Mexico stopped doing it 2 years ago. letting eligible districts keep $60 million in federal money without reducing their state funds. Alaska's legislature approved a one-time school funding boost of $175 million this year, but Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed half of it. Keel says sufficient statewide funding would reduce the risk of failing the disparity test.
The old saying is a rising tide floats all boats. But that veto leaves the kids who are in a dinghy to start with bailing as fast as they can, and they might get swamped by this thing.
The Juneau School District is still waiting on a response from the State Department of Education. The department's school finance manager, Lori Weed, didn't respond to an interview request or a list of questions. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
Hibernation scientists at the University of Alaska Fairbanks have invited colleagues and students from around the world to a workshop in Fairbanks. They reviewed each other's findings indoors last week and will head up to Tulik Lake Research Station in the Brooks Range this week for outdoor lab work. KUAC's Robin reports.
Already, they've been to a supercooling lab and done several hands-on experiments.
It's been pretty intense.
That's Dr. Kelly Drew. She's known for her groundbreaking work in drugs and cryogenics. She's one of the coordinators of the two-week summer school, along with Brian Barnes and Oyvind Toyen, who's giving a lecture here about bears.
Whether it's ketamine involved or not.
About three dozen scientists and students have come to share and hear the latest discoveries.
They're from everywhere. We were so excited to see the international interest.
They've attracted quite a lot of people throughout the world right now, and it's making quite a buzz.
Hibernation occurs across the world. So how has Fairbanks, Alaska, and UAF specifically, become an international center for hibernation research? Credit the Arctic ground squirrel, which was discovered in 1989 to lower its body temperature to below freezing and survive. That discovery by Dr. Brian Barnes rocked science. It also seeded subsequent research in cryogenics that could benefit emergency medicine and space travel. Domenico Tuponi is here from the University of Bologna. He's studying thermal regulation with Dr. Kelly Drew.
We work on hibernation, and I'm interested in what the animal and the species that are present here in Alaska. And I'm studying thermoregulation, and the interest in hibernation is directly correlated to the study I'm doing.
Matt Andrews teaches at University of Nebraska, which is using molecular biology of hibernation to develop therapies and medicines for humans.
We've had success at developing a therapy for hemorrhagic shock. So when a person has profound bleeding, like in vehicular accident or a wartime injury, and they lose a lot of blood, this is a way that you can put the cells of their body into like a hibernation-like state so that you buy time to get them to the hospital.
Horan Tao is a graduate student from Yale University.
This hibernation workshop really brings together the hibernation community. So for me, as one of the newest people in the field, it's nice to actually hear from Brian, hear from Ovian about all their research. It's really nice to see the whole community and how we were doing in hibernation field.
This week, the workshop heads up to UAF's Tulik Lake Research Station for lab work on Arctic animals. For KUAC, I'm Robin.
A recent study found that warming water and the loss of Arctic sea ice are allowing humpback whales to migrate into the Chukchi Sea. A group of researchers compiled data from scientists, local observers, and hunters. They found reports of more than 200 humpback whales spotted as far north as Point Barrow near Ukiagvik. The first recorded sighting was in 2007. Previously, humpbacks had only been seen in the Bering Sea. Kate Stafford, a marine mammal biologist and an author on the paper, says humpback whales aren't the only newcomers in the Arctic.
I think it indicates that the ecosystem of the Pacific Arctic is changing. It's changing enough that it's got enough prey to support things like humpback whales and fin whales and certainly killer whales.
As human-caused climate change warms the Arctic, its ecosystem is rapidly transforming. Humpbacks are one example of a species that was previously found further south, but are expanding their habitats into the Arctic. Stafford still has a lot of questions about this new migration, like what the humpbacks are feeding on in the Arctic and whether they may disrupt the ecosystem for existing residents like bowhead whales. She says long-term, the change is worrisome.
I do find it a little bit alarming. Humpback whales are doing what they need to do to make a living. But for me, it really represents the loss of this incredibly special ecosystem that is the Arctic.
Stafford says to better understand why humpbacks are migrating, researchers will need more photographs of the whales being spotted up north to identify individual whales and to track their movements. She says as long as the warming trend continues, humpbacks are in the Arctic to stay. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 56 degrees and a little bit rainy today. This is KTOO.